Well, thank you very much again. Thank you for this opportunity to share with you. And I understand I'm following on from last week when you looked at the Beatitude. So I want to focus on the word that comes out time and time again in the passage we've just heard, which is there are 121 words in those verses 3 to 7 in 2 Corinthians chapter 1. And there are frequent words like our, the, and we, but I've missed out the most frequent of all of them, which you probably spotted during the reading and tied in with the Isaiah reading, and that's the word comfort. Comfort or comforted appear 9 times in that passage. So here's a word cloud showing the occurrence of words in that passage with all the short words taken out, and you can see that comfort, sufferings, and Christ, and share are the main words, with comfort at the top of the list. And we need to look no further for the theme of this passage, and it ties in with what you were looking at last week. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Now, you've already heard about my work as a hospice chaplain, and I've worked in healthcare chaplaincy for 29 years. And what have they taught me about God's comfort? What have they taught me about the comfort of those who mourn? I suppose first we should just think about what the word comfort is all about. I'm looking around the congregation. I'm thinking there's one or two of you that are as old as I am, and even one or two who might be even older. And if you are of my kind of years, you might remember an advert on the television. And the testimony of this advert as to how memorable it is actually shows what a good advert it was. Who remembers this advert? Yes. You remember those towels? They're washed without comfort and they're all lank and you could close the drawer easily. And then they're washed with comfort and they had to be pushed down to put in the drawer. Is that what Paul is talking about when he talks about comfort? Something that's fluffy and nice? Or is he talking about being comfortable, sitting down on a settee with your favourite drink? I put that to be safe. My favourite drink is coffee. Or is it about thinking how you would live if you won the national lottery, a comfortable lifestyle? Is that what St. Paul is talking about? I don't think so. Paul is not talking about a quiet life, and we only have to look at his life to see that's the case. And the fact that he's not talking about that is portrayed beautifully in these words from the old-time evangelist Billy Graham. God does not comfort us to make us comfortable, but to make us comforters. When it says, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted, it doesn't mean they will be made comfortable. So what is comfortable about? Well, comfort, you know what a fort is, don't you? A fort is a stronghold. So fort is about strong. A piano forte can play quietly, piano, or forte, loud. So fort is about strength. So comfort is about bringing strength. Not being comfortable, but being brought strength. So let's think about these words that we considered last week. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. They will be brought strength. Or the words that we're looking at today, the God of all comfort, who comforts us in our troubles, brings us strength in our troubles, so that we can bring strength to those in trouble with the comfort we have received from God. God often works like this, doesn't he? You know, we're supposed to love people as God has loved us. We're supposed to forgive people as God has forgiven us. So a part of my ministry in the hospice is not to make people comfortable, and certainly not to take their pain away from them. That's actually the job of the doctors. And one of the important things about hospice care is enabling people to live the last days of their life without unbearable pain. But my job is not to take away pain, but in the name of Christ and through God's strength to seek to pass on to them, to bring to them some strength in their time of trouble. And not just to them, also to their families and also to the staff who are caring for them. So I'm going to talk about how to bring comfort to people, how to bring God's comfort to people. And I'm not saying this is what I do, but I'm saying that this is what I've learnt and what I see in the Bible. It talks about, when it talks about bringing comfort to those who mourn. So bringing comfort to people. The first thing, is it knowing what to say to them? No. So actually, I'm telling you what not to do. People often say, when confronted with someone who is grieving of the loss of a loved one, I didn't know what to say. Worse than that, some people do know what to say. And you have to be careful about even saying things that you just don't know are true. People might say, oh, I know you were very close to your mum. Do you know that? Perhaps they weren't. Perhaps they're feeling guilty now that they weren't close to their mum. Or using cliches like, oh, I know how you feel. No, you don't. You don't know how they feel. Even if you've lost your mother, that was not the same relationship as their relationship with their mother. So you don't know how they feel. Or time is a great healer. Or he reached a good old age. You know, like it's easy if you lose someone when they're old rather than when they're young. Of course, there's special pain about losing a child or someone as young. That is a special and very sad pain. But it doesn't mean there's no pain when you lose someone who has reached a good age. So it's not about knowing what to say. There are things you can say. You might consider saying, I'm sorry to learn of your loss. Now, I knew someone who worked in bereavement services who said she wouldn't say that. Because she said, well, I'm not sorry. I didn't know the person. But I think you can still say that you're sorry that they're suffering. Not that it's your fault. But who wants to see someone suffering? So I think that's okay. It's okay to talk about death. It's okay to say, when did your mum die? You don't have to skate around it with passed on, passed over, passed through, or whatever. I remember once I was called to a lady who was sleeping quietly in the bed and the family were there. And I thought, she doesn't look well. And the nurse said, she's sleeping. And I thought, now, this was someone whose first language was not English. And I'm thinking, is she dead or isn't she dead? And the nurse is saying she's sleeping. Well, normally we'd say she's fallen asleep or something like that, wouldn't you, if she died? So I had to say outright, are you saying to me she's died? And she had died. So I was glad I knew that, because the family were in the room. And if I'm going on like the patient's alive and the family all know she's dead, that's not going to work well, is it? So it's okay to say death and dying. Those words are not taboo. It was only, was it last week or the week before? I lose track of the weeks. It was Dying Matters Week. I don't know if any of you are aware of that. And that's about telling people it's okay to talk about death. If there's someone, who knows what you want in your funeral? Have you talked with your loved ones about what your wishes are? Because it's a good thing to do, because it can really help them if you're suddenly taken from them and they just say, oh, we never talked about it, I don't know. So talk to your loved ones about what you'd want. It won't make them sad, because they know one day they might lose you. But it will make them glad to know what you want. Anyway, that's a bit of a digression. So, it's not about knowing what to say, because silence is better. I did an end-of-life session in a study day for nurses in community hospitals. And as a part of that talk, I said it's okay not to know what to say to someone who's bereaved. And one of the nurses came up to me after and said, I was really heartened to hear that because I don't know what to say. And I said to her, well, I don't know what to say either. And I've been a healthcare chaplain for however long. When we go and spend time with those who mourn, sometimes they don't want us to say anything. It's just to be there. This is beautifully illustrated by a little story about a 5-year-old who died. And her friend and playmate was missing the next day. And when she went home, her mother said to her, where were you today? And she said, I've been to see Jeannie's mother to comfort her. How could you possibly do that? Said her mother. Her daughter replied, I climbed on her knee and cried with her. So it's not about knowing what to say. It's about being there. And while you're being silent, if that is good, even better is to listen. Sometimes we feel the need to say something, but actually it's better to listen. Let the person say how they feel, because if you don't listen, you can sometimes miss the point. Sometimes people will cry and say, oh, I'm sorry. And you might jump in and say, oh, it's all right, I don't mind you crying. But they might not be crying because of what you think. They might not be apologizing because they're crying. They might be apologizing for something different. In the hospice, we had somebody who said, how long have I got? And the nurse said, well, it's hard to say. She said, no, I mean, how long till the taxi gets here? You know, it's better to listen. Not just because you may misunderstand what they're saying, but listen. Listening is such a valuable ministry. Listen to their memories. I visited a man in his own home, and this was about 9 months after his wife had died. She was in her 40s, and I'd continued to visit him. It was a tragic and fast death. And he said to me, do you know, since the funeral, apart from the Macmillan lady, you are the only person who has spoken to me about my wife. Even his family had not ventured into the subject of talking about his wife. It's okay to listen, and it's okay to let the person talk about their loved one. They may cry, and that may well make you feel awkward. But actually, you may be doing them a great service by allowing them, giving them permission to cry and to talk about their loved one. You might be rejected. They might tell you to go away. But does that matter? It might make you feel awkward, but does that matter? Don't give up on them. God doesn't give up on us when he comforts us. He's always there and ready for us to turn to him when we're ready. So be there when that person's ready to turn to someone. Will you be there for them? So it's not about having the right thing to say. Is it about cheering them up? You know what I'm going to put next, don't you? It's not about cheering them up. Sometimes people try and be all kind of cheerful and jokey, don't they? And maybe because they can't handle the intensity of the pain that the person's feeling. It's not about covering the pain up. We need to acknowledge the pain. And this again is how God comforts us, isn't it? He doesn't say to us, pretend to me that you're not in pain. Look at the Psalms. How the psalmists communicate their pain and their frustration and their hurts honestly to God. And I'm sure we've all heard it said that that's what we should do too. And St. Paul does that for us as well, doesn't he? Elsewhere in this same book, in chapter 12, he pleads with God to take away his thorn in the flesh. He doesn't ask for God's comfort and strength. He asks God to take it away. But what God actually does is he brings him his comfort and strength and does not take that thorn away, whatever it is. So when someone expresses their pain to us, we're not there to cheer them up and try and take their pain away. We're there to acknowledge their pain. And I have this funny kind of idea that as someone shares their pain with us, it starts to hurt us. It does. It makes us sad. Maybe we'll cry too. But actually, we have taken some of that pain on board. And maybe that is in itself a way of helping them to deal with the pain that they're feeling. To share it. And as well as sharing the pain, it's about being there with them. We've already established that we don't take people's pain away from them, but we are with them in their pain. And again, God's being with us in our pain speaks of this so powerfully. Why are those who mourn comforted? They're not comforted by their pain being taken away. They are comforted by those who are there with them. Henri Nguyen, the theologian, says this, and this is a long quotation. I often used to use it in nursing talks when we talked about spiritual care of patients. It's quite a long quotation, but bear with me. I think it's worth it. Let us not underestimate how hard it is to be compassionate. Compassion is hard because it requires the inner disposition to go with others to the place where they are weak, vulnerable, lonely, and broken. This is not our spontaneous response to suffering. What we desire most is to do away with suffering by fleeing from it or by finding a quick cure for it. And this was particularly poignant to nurses. As busy, active carers, we want to earn our bread by making a real contribution. This means first and foremost doing something to show that our presence makes a difference. And I think that's something we can perhaps all feel. That if we go to be with someone who mourns, we want to feel that our presence makes a difference, or we can do something to make a difference. As caring people, we want to help people in their pain, don't we? And then he goes on, and so we ignore our greatest gift, which is our ability to enter into solidarity with those who suffer. So our greatest gift is not something we do or say, but being there with them. And how does God comfort us in our sufferings, our pain? It's not always by a miracle, but it's always by being with us there, closer to us than we are to ourselves. So it's not about cheering people up. And the third thing that we don't do, you've got the pattern now, haven't you? Answering their questions. People often ask, I don't know why this has happened. I'm sure you've heard that. And when we've interviewed chaplains for job interviews, I've always liked to ask this question. You're talking to a patient who seems distressed. They tell you that they've been given a diagnosis of inoperable cancer. Then they say to you, I don't know why God has allowed this. What have I done to deserve this? What would you say? Now, we've had various answers to that question, some faintly ridiculous. But often Christian people say something like, oh, I would tell them that this is not God's punishment. God loves them, and he is with them in this suffering. And that is not the answer we're looking for. Because what they've done there is they've answered the question as presented. Not the interview question, I mean the question from the patient. And actually there's two problems with that. The first is that just giving someone an off-the-shelf answer like that will not satisfy them. They will go and ask someone else. And, you know, we all like to share our wisdom and advice, don't we? And people say, oh, what should I do? And we're tempted to say, oh, well, what I would do is this. And then they'll go and ask another person. They say, oh, what I would do is this and what I would do is this. What you really need to do is sit down with that person and help them to work out for themselves what they need to do. So when people come to me and they say to me, Mark, I'd like some advice. And I say, well, I don't give advice. Because I'm not going to advise someone else what to do. And the same is true here. It's not about giving the answer. Now, as Christian people, we are tempted to give an answer from gospel. But actually, most of us come to faith not through be giving an answer, but by through our own understanding of what the answer is, our own understanding of God's love and his presence with us, not just by being told. So that's the first problem with giving an answer. And the second problem with that answer is that when someone says, why is God punishing me? They don't actually want you to tell them. That's because you smoked. Or it's because you were involved in the occult. Or because you're a bad person. Or because we're all sinners and God punishes sinners. They are not actually looking for that. Most of the time, at least, in my experience. The chances are they are looking, they are railing against the injustice and the unfairness and trying to work out why this is happening to them. And that question is, in a sense, a symptom of the unfairness of what they feel is happening. So a better answer from a prospective chaplain is to say, tell me more about how you're feeling and why you think this might be a punishment. And then you might find out the pain, the depths of the pain that they're feeling, because they're never going to see that grandchild that's due next year. So it's not about answering questions. It's better to not know. Not knowing is okay. I was asked, why is this happening to me? And I think the best answer I can give is, I'm sorry, I just don't know. Because that's the honest answer, isn't it? I don't know why it's happening to them. No one knows. God knows. But that's an inscrutable mystery. Why does God allow suffering? We sang that song, and the line, God commands every lightning bolt where to strike. You know, I have problems with that idea. I'm not convinced that God does actually work like that, that every lightning bolt is directed by God's will. But I'm not going to get into a theological discussion now. I'll leave that with you. I mean, it's a great song. But, you know, sometimes we can sing these words and actually not quite think them through and what they actually mean. I thought someone was going to defend the song then. So saying, I just don't know, is okay. Because you're sharing with that person in their questioning. And I've said helping to people to find their own answers, not giving an answer. I mean, we can use what we know in the background, not to steer them to the answer we think, but to say, have you thought about how God is with you in this? I mean, you can steer them, you can help them, but not to give answers, to help people find their own sense of meaning in what's happening to them. I think that's a far greater comfort than just telling them. So you'll be pleased to know I'm coming towards the end. And in conclusion, I'd just like to remember again how God comforts us. And the incarnation and the cross, Advent, Christmas, Lent and Easter, show us how Jesus came to share in our sufferings. To show that God is with us in our sufferings in a way that I don't think any other faith or belief can articulate. God is with us. And so I'd like to conclude with two quotations, because other people's words are far wiser than mine. First from Maya Angelou, an American poet, obviously on the left. You've probably heard this before. I've learned that people will forget what you've said. People will forget what you did. But people will never forget how you made them feel. And then the second quotation from Henry Nouwen. A friend can be silent with us in a moment of despair or confusion. A friend who can stay with us in an hour of grief and bereavement. Who can tolerate not knowing, not healing, not curing, that is a friend who cares. God is a friend like that to us. May we be friends like that to those around us.